Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc. Just PODC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless I'm on vacation or I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay. Thanks.
Rude.
Hello. I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
Are you doing it? You're going to do it.
You've literally never had me do the on a joint episode, but now you just are you going to do it?
Well, I'm doing the drink.
Okay, fine.
You can't do the drink.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay, sure. Just completely change it up and then don't tell anybody. Just do your own thing.
It's in my head. I told you.
Boy, I wonder what it's like to be around people with ADHD. Oh, wait. I'm used to this.
Yeah,
so as Montana said in her head and forgot to tell me out loud, I will introduce our joint episode, which is going to be themed around abandoned amusement parks. But before we get to it, Montana, what are we drinking or not drinking, sort of?
So glad you asked. I actually forgot about this book that I got in Louisville, and it's all about making cocktails. So right before we got on, I looked through it to see if anything would match. And I found something, and this sounds really good, but I have to go get milk to make it. So I'll let you guys know if it was good or not. Anyways, here's what you need if you want to drink along with us, but don't drive. We're going to be drinking a chai slide. And what you need is a bag of chai tea, boiling water, of course, 1/4 the cup, 3 ounces of vodka, 1 ounce whole milk, 1/2 ounce of agave syrup or simple syrup, whatever you have, and 1/8 teaspoon of unsweetened cocoa powder, and a little bit of extra for garnish on the top. In a cup, you're going to combine the tea bag and water, steep for 2 minutes, squeeze the tea bag into the cup, then discard. In a cocktail shaker, combine the vodka, tea, milk, agave, and cocoa powder, and shake with ice. Strain into a rocks glass and lightly dust with cocoa powder. And if you want a mocktail, just remove the vodka. Bada bing, bada boom. Add a little bit of extra water. Yeah.
Did it say chai tea on there in the book?
Yeah.
We're going to get some slams for that.
Why?
Chai is tea. You don't say chai tea. It's just chai.
It said one bag of chai tea.
Chai means tea.
So, yeah.
In a lot of different languages.
Whatever. I love chai tea.
I'm just letting you know.
So I'm definitely going to try this. And it does sound tasty.
It does sound tasty.
Yeah. I'll let everybody know how that went.
You'll have to take a picture of it too. So you know what it looks
like. I will.
All right. So I believe you're up first.
Yay. Yay me. cheers.
Oh, yeah. I'm drinking something else, but that'll work. I think we all are.
Yeah, that's right. I think we all are. Okay, so I'm going to tell you about Ghost Town in the Sky. And I didn't follow instructions as closely as it should be. This is not technically abandoned, though it might be cursed.
It's defined as abandoned. It's not open anymore.
It's closed, but there are plans to reopen it. But you'll see why that it's going to be funny.
They've been saying that for decades at this point.
Yeah.
We plan to in 2030, 2040, 2050, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
There have been multiple plans. There have been multiple reopens. And as soon as they reopen, they're like, oopsie, never mind. JK. So, yeah. Anyway, with a name like Ghost Town in the Sky, it's funny how they got their name, too. I'll let you know in just a second. But so, located on a ridge extending from Buck Mountain border, an extension of the Cataloochee Divide, to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, sits an abandoned park named Ghost Town Village. It was also previously known as Ghost Town in the Sky. With the park sitting atop a mountain, getting to it was a challenge. For a time, the only way to get to it was on a chairlift that was 3,370 feet long.
And you've lost me. I'm not going there.
They did at one point. So for many years, the chairlift was the only way to get to it. They did try at one point to like bust tourists up to the park themselves, but it didn't work. Like, the roads are just not great. And I mean, you've been there, haven't you?
Well, obviously I've not been to the park, but so yeah. This is not far away from the Mini Nats that we go to every year, and they actually do photo shoots in the parking lot. And so there's this massive parking lot, and you can see like they have a building where you used to be able to buy tickets and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of see it in the background, but when you're going down the mountain, if you go a certain way into Maggie Valley, you can see it in the mountain, like the whole amusement park. And I saw it the first time I went, I was like, is that an abandoned amusement park? Because that's what it looks like. And he was like, yes, we're gonna. And then he showed me the parking lot and stuff, and it's pretty cool. But the parking lot's actually where the chairlift used to be to take you up to the amusement park. But you're not getting up there at this point. That's not going to happen. No. But they'll let people do like photo shoots in the parking lot. They're fine with that. Doesn't bother them. But it is really cool. Like, you can see it from far away, and there's actual rides and stuff, so you can kind of see it looks almost like several roller coasters.
Yeah, they're kind of like
terrifying
over the side of the mountain. Yeah,
you're taking a roller coaster
out the side of a mountain, and you can just like see down. No thank you.
Nope.
No thanks.
Thank you.
Surprisingly, it was a pretty safe park for it having roller coasters on the side of the mountain. Sort of safe. We'll get to it.
Yeah, you said it was cursed, so okay.
Well, the curse comes in something different, in a form of different stuff. Anyway, so Ghost Town was the brainchild of R.B. Coburn, a Covington, Virginia native who moved to Maggie Valley, North Carolina. Originally, it was planned that the park would be placed between the towns of Waynesville, North Carolina, and Clyde, North Carolina. But future owner Alaska Presley suggested the mountaintop locale. Local investors provided much of the needed capital for the park in the forms of debenture bonds beginning in 1959. I figured
you
would
know. You don't hear that term too often, but yeah. That's,
Yeah, well. Financial
debt.
Yeah.
Debt. That's what debt's short for.
Gotcha. The name of the park was provided by the child of one of the investors. So this place was named by a kid.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, honestly.
Why would you name it Ghost Town in the Sky? That is, so, well, it might be because the park itself, and I don't really go into detail about this, but the park itself is a Western. It's like they have like gunfights on the streets between like cowboys, and they've got like saloons, and the whole theme is just like a Western. So maybe Ghost Town, it being on a mountain, kids like Ghost Town in the Sky. I'm like, oh, maybe the kid is smart. Who knows? I made an assumption about this kid being dumb.
Or maybe he named his pet dog Doggy. Who knows? But I'm just saying.
You know, it's a very literal child. Oh, man. That would be like me as a kid. The park was designed by Russell Pearson and constructed for approximately $1 million in 1960. And inspired by Coburn's trips to the Western United States, over 200 locals helped construct the 40 replica buildings that comprised the Western town located at the mountain's peak. About 120,000 square feet of building were constructed using 300,000 feet of lumber, 200,000 feet of plywood, and 20,000 pounds of nails. So, a lot of construction stuff. The park opened on May 1st, 1961, and quickly became one of Western North Carolina's most popular tourist attractions. It showcased a double incline railway to bring park visitors to the top of Buck Mountain, a journey of more than 3,300 feet. The park added a two-seat chairlift, which at the time was the longest in North Carolina and the second longest in the United States. In the early 1960s, the park hosted several stars of TV Westerns, such as Laramie and Wagon Train. Hourly staged gunfights on the main street were a big draw as well.
All I can think about, I wonder how much of the money that it cost to get this place up and running was simply like the logistics of getting everything up there in order to be able to build it. Because I did the calculation for the inflation calculation. That's over $10 million in today's dollars.
Well, and like, yeah, because you can't
because nobody can get there.
Big truck there. Yeah. A big truck can't get up that mountain. So how are you like airlifting it? Like what is happening? You just got to horse and buggy it? I don't know.
And somebody had to be like hanging out there building those rides too. I wouldn't want to do, I don't even want to ride the rides, let alone try to build this thing before we're even ready. Like, no thanks.
Right. Same. No thanks. It is terrifying. And you look at pictures of it now, like, and it does look abandoned now. Paint's chipping off of, like, you know, roller coasters. And some of the buildings have fallen down.
That's what I've been doing, is looking at pictures of it. It's very intriguing.
It looks terrifying.
Yeah, it does.
So in 1973, the park was sold to National Services for a stock swap. The park didn't do as well under the company due to lack of involvement with its upkeep. But they still managed several notable achievements during their ownership, such as in 1982, performers from the park performed at the World's Fair in Knoxville, Tennessee. And like these performers were like really good actors that worked at the park. And many of them worked, you know, from day one, even would come back now.
And I feel like some of this is like 70s, 80s, 90s, that would be like the height of these amusement parks too, because Six Flags and Dollywood and what's the other one, Cedar something or another,
Cedar Point.
Mm-hmm. yeah, like I feel like that's around the time that all of these started popping up and they started getting really popular.
Yeah, at its peak of tourists coming, it had like 500,000 tourists every year, upwards of 500,000. So it was doing really well for itself. In 1983, country music stars, including Mel Tillis, Reba McEntire, and the Statler Brothers performed at the park. So highfalutin, getting big up there. In 1984, a roller coaster was planned, sponsored by Coors Beer, at a cost of $1 million.
That's like the definition to hold my beer.
Right. The name of the roller coaster was named after Coors and was a nod at the sponsor. The area was cleared for the coaster in that year. But eventually, Coburn bought the park back in 1986 and constructed another roller coaster called the Red Devil. Now, that one's the one I'm pretty sure is the one that you can see over the side of the mountain. I'm not 100% sure because when I was looking at the different roller coasters, I couldn't figure it out. Because that one kind of looks yellow, but if it's faded, it can look yellow. I don't know. Kelsey will let us know. And it has a different name too. So it was originally called the Red Devil, but then it ends up being the Cliffhanger, I believe.
Oh, well, then that would make sense.
Yeah. Which I didn't put any of that in my show notes. I was just curious about which one was the one you can kind of see on the side of the mountain that kind of swings out. It is.
Yeah, it's like a yellowy color now. It looks like it may have been red back in the day, but it's definitely like yellowish now.
Yeah. And that's the roller coaster I think about now when you say ghost in the sky. So under Coburn, the park continued to decline due to mismanagement and a lack of maintenance. And he seemed to actually really want to try. I will give him that. And this wasn't the only park that he founded and owned. He did one in Florida and another one in North Carolina as well. So he's pretty good at this. Many of the big rides, such as the Red Devil, Sea Dragon, and Mountain Town Swings, and many others, were regularly breaking down and rarely open. The chairlift and incline railway also required constant maintenance and repair. Coburn spent thousands of dollars maintaining them to no avail. On July 16, 2002, the chairlift stopped, stranding passengers for over 2 hours with fewer people. Yeah. Yeah, that happened. Some of them were on there for 4 hours and they had to be rescued. And they were like taken down with ropes and pulleys pretty much from the chairlift. Yeah.
No, I would never go back to that place.
Right. With fewer people visiting Ghost Town because of the bad condition of the park, Coburn closed Ghost Town a few days after the chairlift failure and put the park up for sale. The park remained closed and unmaintained for the next 4 years, leading many to believe that nobody would buy the park because of the bad condition of the rides. Ghost Town was sold in August of 2006 to Ghost Town Partners LLC and reopened on May 25th, 2007. After $38 million were spent on renovations and improvements, loans of $10 million were obtained from BB&T. All of the rides were reopened. Oh, no. Yeah. All of the rides were reopened except the incline railway and the train and the monster.
This was opening. What was the year again?
2007.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Okay. You know where this is going. The opening of the park in May was scheduled closely by Dean Teaster and Hank Woodburn, so the motion picture Dean Teaster's Ghost Town, which was filmed in the Western town, could premiere that same weekend. So a movie was filmed there, and they scheduled the reopening of when the movie was supposed to go out. While attendance numbers were not announced, tourism in Haywood County increased 22%, and plans were announced to restore the railway, the train, and the monster in the next season. So it seemed to be, you know, doing really well. But then what happened to everybody?
Timing is everything.
2008. That's right. The financial crisis. And the park, along with the rest of us, suffered. In 2009, after more than $11 million had been spent on the park, Ghost Town filed for bankruptcy. With promises to open the following season from managing partner Lynn Sylvester, it was a bit of a shock when May 2009 rolled around and none of the park's rides had been inspected for the season. Ghost Town claimed they needed $330,000 in a loan to reopen for the summer. But after failing to secure the loan for it, they asked the town to help. Opening the park would create 200 jobs and impact local business for the town. But before the town could vote on the matter, an anonymous investor provided the money to the park, and it opened as planned on May 22nd, 2009. Except for rides that had yet to be inspected. Which I don't know which ones had and which ones hadn't. There's no way to know.
No worries. I'm sure it was fine.
Right. Sure. There was a plan to spend $27 million to improve the park over the next 4 to 5 years, but after struggling through the 2009 season, the park closed again. Owners of the Smoky Mountain Railroad and Bryson City attempted to purchase the property, but were unable to obtain financing. Over the years, the park changed hands a few times, and several attempts to open it back up would either fall through or partially open for a time. Alaska Presley, the owner, would eventually Alaska Presley swooped in and bought the park. And she was a part of like the original construction of it. Alaska Presley, the owner, would put the park up for sale. And she would put parts of it up for sale because there's different levels on the mountain where different things are. And so she would put like the lower level on sale, and then she would take it off the market and put it back on. And this would happen several times. And on other occasions, investors would swoop in to buy the park. Then it never went through and another investor would take their place. And each time they're like, we're going to open this season. And they would either open for like a little bit and then something would happen and they would close, you know, and this continued to happen for like a decade until October 2019. And that's when new investors had a contract and were completing due diligence with an eye to reopen the park. In July of 2020, work on the site and purchase of the property was still proceeding. With the purchase of the park complete in 2021, the new owners planned a $200 million investment to revitalize the park. In addition, other upgrades for Maggie Valley were planned to help accommodate the expected increase in tourism. These plans included niche retail, a hotel, and a Biltmore Village-style housing area. The goal of the new owners is to preserve the original experience. The plan included a Broadway at the Beach-style attraction at the base and an RV resort, as well as a local businesses to enhance the entire area. It was hoped that at least a portion would open in late 2021, although the COVID-19 pandemic and local concerns about the impact of increased tourism combined the delay of the opening. And if you don't know, Samantha, I know you don't know, Broadway at the Beach is, it's in Myrtle Beach. And it's like, it's, how do you describe it, Kelsey? You've been to Myrtle Beach.
Okay. I've been to Myrtle Beach. I just don't really know. You're talking about Broadway or like the area with like the Ferris wheel and.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like.
Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
Like Wonder
Coney Island.
Like Coney Island. Yeah. That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they would, if they're doing that, they're doing it in the mountain. So it's like.
Yeah. When you said that, I was like, but on the side of a mountain instead. So not really like that at all.
Right.
But okay.
Right.
And I think the idea is they're wanting to do a disconnected area so that maybe you don't have to take the chairlift all the way up to the theme park. You can actually have rides like at the base that are easier to get to in and out.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that kind of makes sense. Like have two different types of tickets you can buy. You can buy tickets to just the rides down here, or you can spend a little bit more and get the full experience and go up to the top. That's what I figured, something along those lines.
But too bad it's like not safe at all.
Right. No. Not anymore. Well, I would love to go to something like this. I don't want to ride any rides. I want to see like the performing and like the shopping. That's the thing that I would want to do. And the food.
Because you know, the view would be amazing, I'm sure, just based on where it is. Like the views there are breathtaking. They are amazing. I can definitely say that. But I wouldn't want to ride a ride on the side of a mountain and no, I'm scared enough on a roller coaster as is, especially after our episode. I don't want to do it on the side of a mountain to just add to it. I might die of a heart attack.
I do. And during all of this time, it's so crazy because I didn't even put any of this portion in my notes. Should have. Paul might have enjoyed it. But during all of this, like, back and forth of sort of opening, not opening, selling it, having investors, all of this stuff, all of those years, people are breaking into the park consistently and vandalizing it. And at one point, one investor backed out because there was so much vandalism in it. But the local sheriff said in a news article that basically he was like, yeah, we have to arrest like 40 people a year who break into it.
Jeez. Well, it's not like there's an easy way out of there if you need to leave in a hurry. I mean, it makes sense that they're probably are getting every single person that goes on the property.
Well, yeah. And it's private property. So anybody who's thinking about doing it, don't go up there. It is private property. There is somebody who is monitoring that area and it's not safe. Just don't do it. It's probably maybe a construction site at this point, too. We don't know. So, yeah. But I thought that was funny. Like 40 people get arrested every year. Y'all are dumb. Stop doing it.
Y'all are dumb.
But I've also seen some people who, like, I went on Reddit to, like, look for a ghost town in the sky, like, people who have been there and stuff. Like, there are people who are still breaking in, and they post videos of themselves going through the park. I mean, you know you're not supposed to. Like, you're putting evidence out there, you idiot. Stop being stupid. God. Anyway, on April 4th, 2022, ghost town owner Alaska Presley died at the age of 98.
Holy cow, 98.
And this was very unfortunate because all of the paperwork had, even though this other investor had purchased the location and had plans for it, the paperwork had not fully gone through and she was still the title owner of the park, of the property at that time.
Which means it has to go through her estate before it can go anywhere else. Oh, that's annoying.
Correct. So... on August 31st,
and that's also a very lengthy process and a very expensive process.
It is. And it started a ton of lawsuits after that. North Carolina business court judge Adam Conrad dismissed with prejudice a lawsuit by Presley's niece, Jill McClure, who inherited 50% of Ghost Town. McClure wanted to dissolve Ghost Town in the Sky LLC and sell the property. The other 50% of Ghost Town was owned by an LLC managed by Frankie Wood, who Presley named managing partner. Conrad wrote that regardless of whether McClure and Wood disagreed, Wood had the final say. The ruling meant that development could continue. So the niece is wanting to, like, I don't want anything to do with it. I want to sell it, dissolve the whole thing. Bye. But this Frankie Woods, like, no, we're gonna keep going. And the judge is like, yeah, I'm gonna let him keep going.
And this is why you hire certified financial planners to help you with your estate planning process so that you don't have to worry about this. There are things you can put into place that will avoid these issues. Just FYI.
Yeah.
Save everybody time and money.
Yeah, true. So as of right now, there's only rumors and speculation on whether, when or if the park will ever open again. But there are a few interesting things I want to tell you about the park before I finish.
So is this still like, is the sale still in process? Because it's been ruled on. So he was able to continue with the sale. So is the sale still in process or did that get completed?
I have
completed?
No idea. I have no idea what the deal is. I don't know who the investors are. I don't know what the sale status is. All I kept seeing, anytime I try to look up what the current status of all of this was, is they kept bringing up the lawsuit between Jill and Frankie and that it had, you know, it was done with. But then they were like, but we don't know. But if the park doesn't open, it's going to be like 4 or 5 years from now because there's so much work that needs to be done. And a lot of people are skeptical that it'll even open because, as you can see, the park is kind of cursed. Every time it goes to reopen, it's like, haha, JK, financial crisis.
I don't know.
Pandemic.
Me personally, I'd be like, I don't think this thing needs to reopen. Something tells me there's something going on here. higher power or whatnot is telling me not to do this. So maybe no, maybe don't.
Yeah. Some of the interesting things that have happened, there's some kind of folklore around like the original owner of, or the creator of this, Coburn, Arby Coburn. It was said that it was something to do with like a sheep, and this guy had lost a sheep, and the guy talked to Coburn, and Coburn went back up the mountain to help him try and find the sheep because the guy said it fell into like a cavern. And Coburn went up there to try and find the cavern because he wanted to open it up to tourists, thought he could make a lot of money. But when they got up there, the cavern was closed in and they couldn't hear sheep anymore. That's just folklore, but some of it might be true because portions of the park would cave in at times and it would sink. And eventually he had to like pave over that whole area to reinforce it so that he could put rides on top of it.
That sounds like an excellent idea. No thanks.
Yeah. No thanks. No thanks.
Let's just put all these rides above sinkholes, possible sinkholes, and see right. what happens.
Was this created by Florida? That's all I'm asking.
It kind of sounds like it.
During one of the attempts at reopening Ghost Town in 2010, a retaining wall on the mountain gave way. It led to a huge mudslide. While there were no injuries, 40 homes had to be evacuated and 3 homes were damaged around the mountain. The park did sustain some pretty heavy damage with it, but we just don't know what the extent of that damage is because it was never shared with the public. So you got sinkholes, caverns, whatever. You got mudslides, you got chairlifts that stop just for hours, you know, whatever.
That's part of the adventure of visiting this place.
Right. You might die.
What's going to happen this time?
Right. But the one thing that I couldn't find was that I haven't seen where there were any deaths that occurred, which that's why I'm like, maybe it's safer than we think it is. But I will say somebody got shot. And that somebody was Robert Bradley. In the summer of 2013, during a brief reopening of the park, the longtime Western gunfighting actor for the park, Robert Bradley, was shot in the leg during a performance. The gun was supposed to be loaded with blanks, but one round slug embedded itself into Robert's leg, where it remains today. It's too close to his femoral artery.
Thank goodness that guy was a bad shot. Oh, wow.
In interviews, Robert claims that the shooting was intentional, though not by the person who shot him. Robert is now an armorer for movies and knows proper safety protocol for gun safety on sets like these. I'm not sure if he's thinking like the manufacturer has been messing up this stuff, but he does mention in one of his interviews more recently the incident on or the killing on the Rust set. The Alec Baldwin stuff. Yeah. I don't know if that's what he's thinking. Like it was, or somebody messed with the blank and put it in there. I'm not sure. But an interesting fact about Robert is that the original creator of Ghost Town in the Sky, Arby Coburn, saw Robert performing. And he was so impressed with Robert's performance that he told him he can never leave. And Coburn was so enamored with him because Robert looked a lot like the Apache Kid. And Coburn was obsessed with the Apache Kid. And that's why my name is the Apache Kid today.
Okay. Interesting.
It all comes together.
I was waiting for it.
As of right now, we don't know if it's going to reopen. I mean, I hope it does because I wouldn't mind visiting it. I love Western stuff. It's kind of like pirate stuff. It's interesting to me. But there you go.
I think we're at a place where there's a possibility that if it were to open, it would be popular again. Mm-hmm. I think we're far enough out of COVID and people are wanting to go out and do things. I think that's a definite possibility for them.
Yeah.
Good job. Wow, that sucks.
Yeah.
I can see why you say it's cursed. I really don't know. I mean, I kind of want to go there, but also I would be terrified to go because of all the things. But I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll see what happens.
I mean, if it opens back up, I'm going. That's all I'm saying. I
okay,
watch
you can tell me how it is. If you survive, maybe I'll go.
I mean, I'm not getting on any of the rides. But if they're going to have, like, hotels there or, like, RV camps, like, you could just, like, camp out there, get a hotel there, go to the park, you know. They have shopping. It'd be cool. I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah, and there's some fun things to do right there around Maggie Valley, too. So there's definitely options.
Been.
So, good job. I'm sure Paul will find this one very interesting. Are you ready to hear about my amusement park, which is Lake Shawnee Amusement Park? I'm going outside of my customer base. This is Ohio, or no, West Virginia, I believe.
Hey, now. You're encroaching.
Too bad. I'm not
encroaching
at all.
I approve. I love West Virginia. I approve. My first college I went to was Shawnee State University, and I got lost in the state forest for a couple hours with my ex-girlfriend. It was terrifying.
Yikes.
Fun. Yeah. Yay. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You were almost an episode on National Park After Dark. That's what I'm saying. I love that podcast, by the way.
All right. Well, I heard about this park a long time ago, so it's been on my list. So when we decided to do this, I was like, yes, I can cover this and get it off of my list because I wanted to do the research for it. So this one's going to go in a little bit of a different direction. Funnily, yours was called Ghost Town. Mine has ghosts. So let's get started.
Mine had no ghost. I'm sad about it.
Oddly enough, with the name. So, opened in 1926 and situated in Princeton, West Virginia, Lake Shawnee Abandoned Amusement Park is considered one of the world's most haunted places. There's a lot of those, by the way. A lot of places that claim to be haunted are one of the most haunted places. Just
they can't all be like that.
Disclosure there. They all
can't all be like that. Promise you guys.
They have a website where you can book an overnight experience as well as the arguably less scary daytime tours. Closed and abandoned in 1966, there were more than enough incidents reported well before then to explain why the park was left to the elements. The first thing that's important to discuss is the fact that the property was first populated by the Native American Shawnee tribe for over 2,000 years. The land itself was perfect for settlement, with rich soil, clear river, and a perfect lookout over a cliff. There are known burial grounds on the land as well. There have been many archaeological digs that have revealed ancient artifacts that have told stories of the lives and deaths of people from the tribe. Two such stories are found on the park's website, which is wvlakeshawnee.com. Quote, and I heard of one of these, but not the other. Chief Cornstalk, who lived from 1720 to 1777, was a prominent leader of the Shawnee Nation just prior to the American Revolutionary War. His name, and I am not going to try to pronounce that because I know I will butcher it, translates loosely to stalk of corn in English and is spelled C-O-L-E-S-Q-U-A in some accounts. Cornstalk opposed European settlement west of the Ohio River in his youth, but he later became an advocate for peace after the Battle of Point Pleasant in 1774. His murder by American militiamen at Fort Randolph during a diplomatic visit in November 1777 outraged Native Americans. Historians believe he may have been born in present-day Pennsylvania and with his sister moved to the Ohio County or country. It says country. I guess they called it Ohio country anyway. Near present-day Chillicothe?
Chillicothe,
I figured
Ohio.
You would know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When the Shawnee fell back before expanding white settlement. Stories tell of Cornstalk's participation in the French and Indian War from 1754 to 63, though these are probably apocryphal. His alleged participation in Pontiac's rebellion from 1763 to 66 is also unverified, although he did take part in the peace negotiations afterwards. There was another individual, Tecumseh, 1768-1813, in Shawnee, meaning shooting star or panther across the sky or blazing comet, was a Native American Shawnee warrior in chief who became the primary leader of a large multi-tribal confederacy in the early 19th century. Growing up during the American Revolutionary War and the Northwest Indian War, Tecumseh was exposed to warfare and envisioned the establishment of an independent Native American nation east of the Mississippi River under British protection. He worked to recruit additional members to his tribal confederacy from the southern United States. He was among the most celebrated Native American leaders in history and was known as a strong and eloquent orator who promoted tribal unity. He was also ambitious, willing to take risks and make significant sacrifices to repel the settlers from Native American lands in the old Northwest Territories. Since his death, he has become an iconic folk hero in American, Indigenous, and Canadian history. And then there's a note at the bottom of this that says, again, this is the park website. We ask that when you visit, you bring an offering to pay respect to those who have passed on this property, end quote.
Aww.
Something I just realized, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have driven past this park multiple times and didn't know what it was because the path from like where we are here to Huntington, where my grandparents, well, one of them passed, used to like lived, we would go like when I would drive with my dad or whatever, we would go right past it. I remember seeing when I'm looking at these pictures, I'm like, I've seen that in real life, just like on, you know, from a car. It's crazy.
It's crazy that you went by and didn't know, but I don't think they really advertise it a whole lot. I mean, it's been on multiple TV shows and series and that sort of thing, but I don't think it's really advertised a whole lot, especially not locally. But so continuing on, as seems to be a pattern, the property was settled, i.e. stolen, by Mitchell and Phoebe Clay in 1775, who established an 800-acre farm and had 14 children. According to the reported history, they settled and had several children, two of which were killed by Shawnee tribe members in an attack to deter the white man's settlement on their land. It was reported a third was kidnapped and later burned at the stake, though that doesn't really sound like something that, as far as I've heard, the indigenous tribes did. That sounds more like what white people did around that time, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But you can visit the gravesite and tombstones for the three children on the property today. There is a spot for it where they were buried.
No, thanks.
Pass. Apparently, this did not make the Clays move or second guess their decision. Instead, they remained on the property and with the help of other settlers, found some members of the tribe, attacked them and killed them. And all of this occurred around 1783. Apparently, they stayed living there, but not much is noted on the property after that point until Conley Snido came into the scene in 1926 when he began the project of dredging the property to create a man-made lake, using a plow with a board in the front to shape the lake. During that time, coal miners and their families would come from miles away to visit the lake and enjoy some fun in the sun. Snido also decided it was the perfect place to begin building an attraction complete with circular swings, a water slide, a dance hall, and a speakeasy, of course. 1920s. There was also reports of a Ferris wheel, which you can see in the pictures of the abandoned park, and a racetrack. Around 1966, things started to take a turn for the worse. Well, I say they started to take, that's when it closed, actually. But it closed because there were two reported drowning deaths, although some sites said one. And a young girl also died on the swing ride. In 1967, the park was permanently closed when they failed a health inspection, which is odd. These deaths didn't cause the closure. The failed health inspection did, which is weird.
Oh my God, this place looks creepy as fuck.
Yeah, very. According to an article written by Jeffrey Stanton, quote, "The first mysterious death, which has been confirmed by the owners, was of a young boy who drowned while the swimming pool was still open. A mother dropped her child off at the park one morning to return that afternoon to find that her child was nowhere to be found. After searching the entire ground, she found her child's lifeless body floating in the pool. The owners filled the pre-existing pool with sand to prevent any further accidents. And it was rumored, this is not part of the article, but it was rumored that he had found like a pipe or something where there was possibly some kind of suction to like clean out the pool. And his arm got stuck in there and it pulled him, kept him down, and he couldn't get his arm out. So he drowned.
Oh, poor kid.
The second death occurred in the children's playground where a swing set was located. The operation revolved at a high rate of speed. So it's one of those swings that pulls them around. Yeah, the kind that I refuse to ride on.
I used to love those things.
I refuse to ride them.
Covering those swings before, I'm not. Yeah, exactly. Ever, no thanks.
One day in the early 1950s, a truck delivering soda to a refreshment stand accidentally backed up into the path of the swings, and a young girl was killed when she was struck by the truck.
What the fuck?
How do you accidentally do that out of curiosity? Like, and you're lucky it only killed one person.
Like, I know the swings aren't like it's not like the huge swings that you see nowadays, but it's not small.
Mm-mm. And surely there was something around it. I mean, I would hope there would be some like kind of barricade rail? Of some kind, so that you don't get in the way. So I don't know. This was the 1960s. Apparently it was a hell of a time. I don't know. In any case, it remained closed and quiet until 1985, when a former employee named Gaylord White purchased the land and reopened the attraction the summer of 1987. From all I could tell, it seems that the insurance costs were too much for the park, so it closed again just a year later in 1988.
That seems to happen a lot with these parks. People like go in and they buy it having investment.
And then realize how much it costs?
Yeah, and not just like in the upkeep or the repair, but also in like insurance costs and the things that you don't think about when you're going into revitalize these things.
The insurance costs have to be astronomical, because this is such a risky operation no matter how careful they are. Like, I can only imagine how much the insurance costs for these places.
No kidding.
However, never one to be dissuaded, White found other purposes for the property and attempted to use it for off-road motorsports and fishing tournaments. In the early 1990s, while developing some land for housing, one of the crews uncovered numerous indigenous artifacts on the property, and archaeologists were brought in to the property from Marshall University. Over several years, they uncovered graves and artifacts, including 13 whole skeletons, mostly elderly and young children. There are also believed to be as many as 3,000 bodies of indigenous Americans buried on the property. Shortly after this...
Please tell me they buried them back.
Those, yeah.
Did they put them
back? There's very specific areas that are cleared. Like, I'm going to get to it, but they're not doing anything with this property anymore. That's why it's closed and it won't be reopened. As far as I can tell, I mean, there wasn't anything specifically stating that, but I imagine since they left the rest of the property alone that they would have put them back.
Well, you never know. White people do like to take things that aren't theirs.
Well, the artifacts were kept there. Because they're on display, you can see them, but they didn't take them from the land. Shortly after this, deciding the property would no longer be ideal for housing, White began hosting Halloween paranormal tours, keeping the land and the abandoned rides intact. Many have reported orbs and photos, disembodied voices, chanting, unexplained sounds, and the rides moving of their own volition. The Ferris wheel is said to have a ghostly rider who is described as a man and situated in the car that's at the 9 o'clock position. There are reported cold spots where the swings are still hanging just above the deteriorating wooden seats. And the tour guide says that the cold spots are typically around the swing it's always the same swing, and he'll intentionally not tell the guests which one it is. And they typically will report it in the exact same swing, which he believes is the one that she was sitting in when she died.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some of those seats also move on their own. Remember the Dead Children's Playground episode?
Oh, God.
White also reported that when he worked at the park, he also had a feeling of someone behind him that would touch his shoulder or his arm. He reported that while he was working to clear the land for his project that he was going to do for the housing that he eventually abandoned, he saw a full apparition of a girl in a pink dress with ruffled sleeves. He, of course, believed this to be the ghost of the young girl who died on the swings all those years ago.
He immediately got it, and it said on there, he immediately got off of his tractor and let her have it since it seemed she was very intrigued by it. He also reported hearing chanting on the property as well. Now I'm going to note, this is private property. So no going to the property and buying tickets or for entry. You actually have to contact the owner ahead of time and arrange the visit because they only do private tours. And there's a number, an address, an email address, and a Facebook account. So you have plenty of opportunities to contact them. From all I could tell, it's privately owned by Chris White, which I'm assuming is a relative of the original White that bought the property. And Chris also seems to be the main tour guide, because whenever I looked at the reviews, most of them mentioned him by name. It seems to be a small operation, with visitors saying often that they also seem to try to be as respectful as possible to the land's entire history, especially the indigenous history. That being said, I'll close with a visitor firsthand account that I was able to find on TripAdvisor.com, and it's by Dan BL288V of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Quote, we've got a picture apparition of a young, tall, skinny boy that looks scout. Looks like he's wearing a buckskin jacket with hands in his pockets. A couple we friended and walked around with, their iPhones kept cutting off and on, and we had no problems with our Androids. So I guess they don't like Apple. A large mist accumulated in front of us out of nowhere, leaving the burial grounds. While back at the burial grounds, I walked off by myself toward the river and came to a complete stop. And although not scared at all that night, something made me feel like I better not take one more step. And I turned around and walked back to the other folks that were back there with us. We also heard, back at the burial grounds, a very loud sound of a horse, kind of like it was a ripping, snorting sound. And to best describe, it was between dimensions, which I don't really know if that's the best way to describe it, because I don't know what that means.
The horse was between dimensions.
My stepson asked his mother if he should record anything, but he never did. But later we found that there was a self-recording on his phone with a floating up and down orb with a growling sound accompanying it that sounded like something from a Hollywood recording studio for a horror flick. Chris, the owner, told us that when they are back there sometimes, their phones would pocket dial each other, but not like a normal accidental butt dial, whatever that means. Then to top it all off, when we were leaving, before we got in the car, my stepson felt a hand touch his shoulder. He absolutely freaked out to the point where he cried. I tried to post the apparition photo on my review, but it didn't show up. No thanks. This stuff happens when you don't expect it. Like, nothing's happening, then out of the blue, it happens. Like fishing, though, sometimes you fish, sometimes you catch. Oh, yeah, at the swings. First time we went there, there was a stuffed pink elephant on one of the swings. I think someone had left it there for the little girl. That actually seems to be a common thing, because I saw a lot of pictures with different stuffed animals on the swings.
Yeah, same.
It fell off by itself, sitting pretty 1 minute. Then it was like something pushed it off to the ground right in front of us. Overall, even if you don't experience anything paranormal, we enjoyed the people. They were great and shared a lot more history with us than you can read on the internet. And that is all I have to cover on this abandoned amusement park.
I mean, that's okay. That's pretty cool that they do like tours where they're talking about all of the history, but they could just give it back to the indigenous people so that they have their graves. I don't know. Seems like that would be cool. That'd be swell. You know, that's just me. No wonder it's haunted.
Or they could give, like, the part that's theirs to them or whatever, you know.
Or yeah, I don't know the legalities or anything to do with any of that, so.
Man, that's crazy. I kind of want to go just because I've driven past it so many times and I've seen it. And I've just thought, that's like an abandoned old park. But I didn't know it had all this history. Oh, my God. I love this podcast.
Like, during the daytime, it just looks kind of creepy. But at night, the pictures that are at night are so much worse. They're so much more creepy. It just looks like an abandoned park.
These pictures are real creepy. Yeah, it reminds me of like Goosebumps for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a lot of the reviews said that it's the tickets themselves for the tours are not super expensive, and it was worth it to them, even though they didn't. There were several that didn't have any paranormal experiences. They said it was worth it to them to just get good pictures because it's a really good spot to get good pictures. Mm-hmm. And then there weren't a whole lot of paranormal reviews that I could find, but I also couldn't find a lot of places where people commented. So I don't know how often this place is actually visited, to be honest. Despite the fact that it was on multiple TV shows and is reported to be one of the most haunted places.
Oh, I bet Zach Bagans checked it out.
Oh, I'm sure.
That guy.
Good old Bagans.
God, he's such a dweeb. Can't stand him.
Good description.
Oh.
Well, this was fun.
Good job. I'm not going to go, Kelsey. You're on your own for that one. I've already had my own ghost encounter at the gel brewery. House distillery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to pass.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll go with Michael. He'll go with me, maybe.
There's a lot of maybes in that sentence.
Is he like scary stuff?
I feel like I go back and forth. He likes scary movies, but he only likes certain ones, you know? I don't know if he would like a place like that. I don't know. It's not about what he likes, though. I want to go.
Paul would be just super logical, and he'd be like, if there's spirits here, then it's fine. They don't want to harm me. I didn't do anything. Okay, sure, whatever.
Oh, you don't know that. If it's a poltergeist, it can harm you. Ah, oh, Paul.
Oh. I mean, that's my assumption of what he would say. That sounds like something he would say. Very logical, because we've been to a couple of places that were pretty creepy, and I was like, I don't like how I feel in this room. I want to leave. And he's like, it's no big deal. I'm like, you can stay. I'm going to go. And I literally walked out of the building because I was freaked out. And he was like, oh, it was fine. I didn't see anything. I'm like, let's just say that I'm an empath and I felt something there and you probably should have listened to me, but you're fine. So it's all good. Let's go.
I do see that there's a clown. I don't know, like a clown, like a mouth, like open. You know what I'm talking about? Like mm-hmm. it's like painted yeah, it's on creepy. Something. Michael yeah. hates clowns. So that would be something he would not enjoy. But like, I mean.
What was the deal with all the clown stuff for these amusement parks during a certain time period? Like the one that you were talking about when we did the different places, mm-hmm. big old clown on the sign. Like, what is wrong with people? That's terrifying.
I don't know. I guess it used to be like I think clowns used to be like something that kids actually enjoyed. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't think they ever enjoyed it because they grew up terrified of clowns. And that's why we know that it should be involved in horror films.
I don't know. Because like I had a friend growing up. It was our next door neighbor or whatever, across the street neighbor. And at her mom's house, because she lived with her grandparents, but at her mom's house, she had her whole bedroom was decorated in clowns. And I used to hang out with her younger brother more. So when I went and stayed over at their house with him, I would sleep in her bedroom. And those fucking clowns terrified the shit out of me. I hid them under the bed because she had some that were on like the headboard. And I hid them under the bed anytime I stayed there. And then I'd put him back before I left because I didn't want him looking at me when I was going to sleep, you know?
I'd be scared if they were under the bed knowing what I don't know what they're doing. They might come out when I least expect it or when I'm sleeping.
Oh man, what a time to be alive. I hope she's okay. Not, you know, mentally
the clowns didn't get her.
Yeah, well, good job. This was a good episode. Lighthearted, needed it.
It was fun,
you know. Anyway, whatever. Until next time. We love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
The Reaper will come for us all.